story about the FLMP user program in last year. 10 minutes, and of course afterwards discussion. So please, Dorota, the floor is yours.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the PAC, dear colleagues. I don't know what this means. As usually, on the beginning of New Year, I should and I want to present some report about our user program. And in my talk, I will show you some statistics of user experiments carried out in our laboratory. And on the end, I would like to say a few words about development of the new platform for proposal contributions and for our user program. As you heard already, in 2018, our reactor was working not like usually. Usually we have 5 cycles in the first half year. It's called in our user program first round, and in the second half year 4 cycles, so for second round. In the first half year for our user program, we had just 3 cycles in January, February, and in the April. In the March and the May, we have just few days. Because of that, in June 2018, we have decided to postpone second experimental round and to move all of the beam times assigned previously to the first half of 2019. So in 2018, we had actually just 3 cycles for the experiments for the users. It means it was actually 41 days for the experiments. But even for this 41 days, I would like to show you statistics for our user program. So we start with the number of the proposals. In first half of 2018, we have 131 submitted proposals and 116 accepted. The tendency is quite good. You can see, you can compare with the year 2017-2016, and actually we get more than half of value of numbers of proposals. Of course, the highest number of proposals we get on the UMO facility, on the SANS facility, then like in 2017 and 2016, quite high number we get on the SCAT facility, on the diffractometer SCAT, then high resolution Fourier diffractometer, and also for the reflectometer grains and for the inelastic neutron scattering spectrometers NERA. But for us, very important task is also reports from this experiments carried out on our facilities. And here I present comparison from year 2017. We have 203 accepted proposals. On the end of 2017, we get just 76 reports. The situation was really bad. But on the end of 2018, or actually the situations from yesterday, show us that we have more than half reports from this period. So the situation is not satisfied for us, but it's better than in the end of 2017. And all the time we provide, we write emails, we call to users and try to ask them to put our reports, their reports on our website. The situations after first half year of 2018 is similar. Actually, in this half year we have 116 accepted proposals, but how I said, we had just three cycles, first, second and the fourth. And for these three cycles we had 63 proposals and 63 experiments was carried out. And from these experiments up until now we have 30 reports. It's about half, but we need to know that some experiments which should be carried out in the first half year because of the shutdown of the reactor was postponed to the end of 2018. So these people had 2 months now to put this experimental report. So next comparison I will try to do to the next session. On this slide, I show you proposal distributions with the science correlations. You can see that it's in this first half of 2018, it's similar like in 2017. So about 40% for the material science, 25% for the physics experiments, then 13% for the chemistry, 6% for the applied science, 8% for the geoscience, and 9% for the bioscience. On this slide, I would like to show you how many visitors we have in 2018. In this 3 months, 52 person come to us to carry out experiments. More than half of these visitors they come to the SANS facility, to the UMO, then to the SCAT diffractometer and to the high resolution Fourier diffractometer, and also few users come to the NIRA spectrometer, Epsilon diffractometer, FSD diffractometer, and RTD diffractometer. In this period, mostly people from Russia come to us to carry out these experiments, 10 people from Germany, few, 3 from Poland, 3 from Ukraine, and few from Slovakia, Estonia, Bulgaria, Romania, and 1 user from Egypt. Very important for us is instrument scientific outcome. And here we have really great results because in 2018 we have 113 publications. These publications are from experiments carried out on facilities on our spectrometers. And mostly this publications are with impact factor 3, 4. Of course, some of them are lower. Here I present 3 the best on the highest impact factor publications. It was already mentioned that the very good paper was from experiments carried out on DN12 diffractometer with the impact factor more than 12. Then diffractometer, high resolution Fourier diffractometer with impact factor 6, and UMO also with impact factor almost 6. I think you remember last my talk when I explained very difficult way of our user program, how to apply it, proposals, how we are working in our user office group. And in January 2017, after PAC, we decide to start developed our panel, our website for the proposal submissions. We contact with company Intergrafica, and from the spring, actually, we are started working in this direction. Work is quite difficult because these people are not specialists in this area, but after many, many, many meetings and explainings, I can say that new panel is already exist. Now we started to put some data from old panel to make a test work. Of course, first it will be testing in our user office, then in our laboratory, in our technical experts. I hope until summer we will able to prepare test work for our scientific experts. And now we are waiting for the contract, and I hope that on the next PAC meeting in January, I could show you already that, or I tell you already that this panel is working well. Of course, next round in the spring, we will try to test in few lines or few for few facilities, not everything all one time. And for some period, our old panel and our new panel will be working simultaneously. So, and actually, it's all. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dorota, for this nice and concise presentation, which is now open for comments and questions. Let me make one comment. At the moment, I don't see another one, but of course, you may later on. First of all, congratulations to this new user or the review panel. I'm really enthusiastic, and I'm much looking forward to be one of the testers. First testers. The other point is the experimental reports. I think, well, it's really very nice that the ratio is increasing, but it's still around 50, not much more than 50%, if I'm very optimistic. Yeah. So I think the only way out is to be really very strict and finally to say we won't accept proposals from proposers who have not yet submitted their previous experimental reports, because indeed it makes very, very difficult, if not impossible, to make a really independent review without knowing the outcome of the previous experiment, whether it was completed at all, which result, and so on and so forth. And of course, also to avoid some tricks, because we know that some people try to make tricks. It's better if everyone makes it really openly the right way, and I think the only way is just to be formal at this point and to say no proposal unless you have already presented your
actually reports. In this new panel we will have some automatically options that without reports it will be very hard to apply it for the BIMTEN.
Yeah, thank you once again. Further questions, comments? Ah, Sasha, please.
just wonder, so in your statistics, DN6 was absent. Oh, I didn't see it. And yes. What wonders me that in general, for the majority of the instruments, you have some fluctuations with the number of proposals from year to year. But for some instruments, you have permanent degrade of the applications. Did was question and problem somehow addressed and analyzed? What is
here was absent DN6 because visitors was come to DN6 the fractal.
No applications from outside. You mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe applications, maybe yes, but they didn't come personally.
I see.
They can send samples. Yes.
All right.
Here are just people who.
Okay. Second question. For example, Epsilon. From year to year, the number of applications is decreasing, or visitors, number of visitors rather, decreasing. Was it somehow addressed or analyzed by the user office?
Actually, in this area, another regulations with Germany, and I think there is also depends that on Epsilon, this experiments are very long, and they need a longer period to carry out this experiment. So. Yes, the number of visitors decreasing, but this facility is working and they have papers, and I think they come not personally, but yes, and they can send samples and so on.
So you wouldn't worry if eventually there will be no visitors to Epsilon?
You know, for example, to DN6, they are not visitors, but they make good works, and it is not not problem to send samples. Yes, for example.
Yeah, thank you once again. Oh yeah, Sasha.
So does it mean that the statistics, what is shown, is in a way distorted? Because it's not included the experiments, it's only visitors, not the user experiments.
These are just visitors. Which
and what about the user experiments?
I have just with applied and submitted and accepted proposals. But persons, I can say that 90% of experiments was done.
Okay, this in some way it's representative statistics. Then I would have a question. I would suggest to look more in the instruments which have a certain decrease of external users. For example, if I look for Epsilon, if we have corrected by a factor of 2 for 2018 because of the available beam time,
but
it's still steady decrease.
Actually, please remember that the last is first part of 2008, yes? 18. So we don't know exactly how many visitors will be in the whole year, yes? This is just for a half year.
Okay, yeah? I wish, but yeah. So simply I would suggest you to really keep it in mind, because it may happen that some instruments are losing, they're not more interested for users. Is this actually signal to the lab? Directorate of the lab to consider if these instruments should be upgraded or useful at all.
Okay.
Please do it like this. If I would see in my facility something like this, I would be very much alarmed.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Richard, please.
So it's very good to see all the statistics, to see what's in there. Just two things to pick up on. You know, are there understanding of why behind there? So, for example, you see a big jump in publications, which is great. Is there an understanding of what actually has got to that point that you've got this big jump? And also, you know, on the reports that you're getting back afterwards, you know, you can see an improvement there, which is good. You've got to remain 50%. Which you would like to get from them. you know, for example, how easy is it to submit the experimental report afterwards? Is that the blocking factor, or is it something? Is it something else?
If we are about, I didn't present the statistic or the comparison publications per facilities, but. I just didn't have it here, but actually we have strong groups for some connected with some facilities, and other groups maybe are not so strong, but they published, and the number of publications is increasing on each facility. So from each facility. So I think we can try to make some in detail some comparison for the facilities and the papers. And I can present it, and we can discuss it in a laboratory, and I can present it the next time. What about the reports? This is so that each user has three officially in our documents, in our user program, has we told that and they have 3 months after carried out of experiments. These reports, it must not be paper or something like this. It could be just describing of experiments that it was done or not, and why not? If not, then why, and so on. We have some system of some. Points, and if someone don't have reports after 3 months, we suggest our facility responsible person, which make this distribution, that they should take off 1 point or 2 points for this that someone don't have report. But we just suggest, yes, the decision about experiments take a responsible for facility. And of course we try to, we write to people, to our users, we call them and ask them for the reports, but yeah. But in this new system, it will be really, it's already we done so that if someone will apply for the new BIM time, and in the system we'll have some missing reports, then it will be impossible to get this BIM time.
Professor Fuss, I think you wanted to ask something.
I have just a question to the Russian applications. What is the amount of institutions outside Dubna in the Russian figure?
I don't know the number now, but it's quite big. This is actually whole Russia. If you ask asking about Russia, yes, that it's from. I don't know, but each big city from Russia applied for the experiments for the BIM time. I can prepare this for the next time, but yes, this number of universities for institutes from Russia is quite big.
Yes, thank you once again. Oh, yes, please.
If I remember well, about a year ago, there was a there were statistics about reports from the users after the experiment. And there was a recommendation to persuade these users to send the reports, because many of the users didn't provide the reports after the experiment. Has the situation improved or is much better? And so on. This is my question.
So
it was about a year ago at the PAC meeting. There was discussion that the users after the experiment didn't provide the reports.
Yeah.
So many of the users didn't send the reports. So my question is, and recommendation was to push.
Yes, I told that we write them emails, we call them, we try to speak through local contacts. Yes, but users know that without the reports they will get so the amount of points will be lower, and it can be the situation that they will not get enough points to get beam time. But even that, some of them, they just don't write reports.
So it means the situation is...
But we have more reports than 2 years ago, yes?
Yeah, yeah.
So some of users, they change it.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think the report issue has already been discussed in detail, but yeah, you don't have any more. Okay. So any further comments? If this is not the case, then let me thank you once again for this presentation. And let me invite the next speaker, Professor Bakuchava. He will report about the current state of the Fourier stress diffractometer. So the floor is yours.
Dear committee members, dear colleagues, my talk is devoted to current state of Fourier stress diffractometer, FSD, and this instrument is dedicated for residual stress analysis in bulk samples and new advanced materials. It operates at beamline 11A of AIBR2 reactor, and the layout of the instrument is presented here. It's a conventional type of layout, but except one thing, we have in gap of a neutron guide fast Fourier chopper for neutron beam intensity modulation, which can give us a high resolution of the instrument. And here is a sample place surrounded with detectors, and the same information as a three-dimensional model. Here is a chopper, neutron guide. And after this wall, we have a goniometer with sample position, 90-degree detectors for stress scanning and backscattering detector, and some electronics units and additional equipment, which is not shown here. So last year, we performed a lot of works on FSD diffractometer, and here is the table. We will list in chronological order, and I will focus only on main tasks, which we performed. First of all, I would like to discuss the detector system of FSD. So we have three detectors on FSD. First one is backscattering detector, which is based on lithium glass scintillators with photomultipliers. We have 16 photomultipliers in this detector, and it provides quite good resolution level of 2 × 10⁻³, which is very sensitive for peak broadening and peak shifts. For stress scanning, we are using 90-degree geometry, using 2 ± 90-degree detectors. We are calling these ASTRA detectors. And these detectors consist of 7 modules, each detector. And each module has individual time focusing surface. These detectors are based on zinc sulfide scintillator with wavelength shifting fibers. And scattering angular range varies from ±20 degrees, and total solid angle for each detector is about 0.1 steradian. and such a detector provides resolution level of 4 × 10⁻³. Last year, in 2014 and in 2015, we installed 4 elements on each side, left and right, of these detectors. And according to plan, according to design, we should have 7 elements for each detector. And task for this year is to complete installation of all detector modules, and this will be provided by spectrometer complex department. And I hope that we will complete this task successfully. Next is sample positioning. For sample positioning, for precise sample positioning, we are using 4-axis Huber goniometer, which was purchased in Huber in 2013. It provides quite a wide range of movements in 3 linear directions, X, Y, Z, and 1 rotation, full circle. And it has maximum load of about 300 kilograms. So on this goniometer, we can install heavy samples, additional equipment like a stress rig and furnaces and so on. And recently, we also added 2 circle segments from Huber 2 for sample tilting. Next task is connected with radial collimator. Since we have a wide aperture detector system, we should cover this angular range with corresponding radial collimators, because for stress scanning, we need to select in bulk of the material a small scattering gauge volume of typical size of about 1-2 millimeters. And moving the sample, we can scan it and get a distribution of residual stresses within a detail of sample. So we ordered in Denmark in JJXA firm such a collimators, and in 2016 we got these collimators and installed on a beam line using a specially designed movable platforms. So now these collimators are used in regular experiments on user proposals. And here you can see calculated analytically and simulated by Monte Carlo beam profiles for such collimators. If necessary, these collimators can be shifted in horizontal direction when strain scanning is not necessary, and put it back into a scatter beam. And we checked a profile of these collimators by scanning with thin 1 millimeter sample, and we got a resolution of collimator which was estimated as 1.8 millimeters across the scattered beam. And here is a typical picture from experiment for sample surface position scanning. So using such a collimator, we can determine position of a sample surface with high accuracy of about 1 millimeter, or maybe even better. So at this point, gauge volume hits sample surface, and we observe very tiny, very tiny diffraction peaks. And going deep into material, as peak intensity increased, and using analytical function for fitting this point, we can get a parameter of position of a surface, undersurface position, and so on. And also, we performed one important test with such collimators. We used a so-called standard WAMAS sample, which is a shrink-fit ring and plug made from aluminium. And this sample was measured many times on various diffractometers worldwide. And distribution of residual strains, stresses can be calculated in such system very easily using elasticity theory. And here's a comparison of our results with theoretical calculations. So they are coincide quite good. So which means that our diffractometer is quite sensitive to strain gradients in these samples. Next, I want to give just a couple of examples with real experience with radial collimators. First experiment is experiment with such a thick, 2 millimeter thick steel plate, and we measured residual stress distribution across a weld line, and it was multi-pulse welded with different type of welds. The samples and our colleagues from Cottbus University in Germany made FEM calculations for such samples for different components of stress, and we compared results of calculations and our experimental results. And coincidence, it was found that coincidence is quite good. And the next example is related to Sharpe surveillance specimens, which are used in nuclear industry for monitoring of state of reactor pressure vessel material state. Since it is during operation, the reactor pressure vessel is subjected to harder radiation, and with surveillance specimens are put near the core of the reactor and also irradiated. And we are using for monitoring of material state under irradiation. So from time to time, these samples are taken from the core and subjected to mechanical tests according to Sharpe. It's an impact Sharpe test. But the number of such samples for each reactor, especially for old reactors, are limited. So its problem is to how to reconstruct such specimens and put it back for further irradiation. So the idea is was quite simple, to apply different welding techniques for reconstructing such specimens. And here is a procedure described how it's organized. So central part is cut it and replaced with the same material. But the problem is that such a reconstruction by welding should not destroy, should not change significantly microstructure of this material in order to have relevant results for further irradiation. So we studied modeled non-irradiated specimens of Sharpe size, but reconstructed with different welding methods: arc-stat welding, electron beam welding, laser welding, and we studied residual stress distributions for each sample, which are presented on the right on this graph, or all three components. And also, in addition to stress distributions, we observed a very significant peak broadening effect at weld seam positions. Exactly, we are very well coinciding. And after analysis of diffraction peak broadening, we came to conclusion that there are two effects. It's a broadening due to dislocation density at these places, and here are estimated distributions for dislocation density, which maxima are coinciding quite well with weld seam position. And also we detected changes in crystallite size at these places. So these two effects can lead to changes of mechanical property of materials, and during such a reconstitution procedure by welding, this effect should be taken into account. Next possibility is to study materials under various conditions, and simplest one is study materials at elevated temperature. For such experiments, we are using mirror furnace, which is two reflectors with halogen lamps with a power of 1 kilowatt each, and maximal temperature is 1,000 degrees centigrade. It's controlled by Lakeshore, and recently we upgraded the system with a cooling system, chiller Lauda. And here's an example of such experiment with small sample. It was a ferrite martensite steel. Sample was initially quenched, and we revealed a strong peak broadening at this state. But after annealing at various temperatures, we observed a decrease in peak width, which means a decrease in dislocation density. And it starts at above the temperatures about 500 degrees centigrade. And here are details of Williamson-Hall plots, how we analyzed peak broadening effects. Another possibility is to subject samples not only temperature, but temperature and applied load. In 2015, we installed stress rig on FSD diffractometer. Stress rig was initially elaborated and produced by Nuclear Physics Institute in Rzeszów, Czech Republic, and we purchased this device from them and installed on our diffractometer. Stress rig can be easily installed on Huber goniometer using special plate. It can be installed horizontally or vertically, depending on experiment. Even small sample investigation is possible using such a conical grip. Here you can see typical shapes of a such samples. We have screw heads, and they are suitable for tensile and compressive experiments. Microscopic deformation of sample can be evaluated using extensiometer. And also there is a possibility to heat metallic samples using direct current. And heating is possible until 800 degrees centigrade. And here are different grips for different samples. And let me show just several examples of such studies. First one is austenitic steel under applied load. So applying some force to the material, we can measure from shifts of diffraction peaks for each reflection strain. We can measure strain and plot strain stress curves, and it occurred that for different HKLs, it has a different slope, which means that material is anisotropic, and this is well known from elasticity theory that reflections, for example, 2.00 are softest reflection, and reflections like 1.11 are hardest reflections, and we can clearly observe it here. And also from these strain stress curves, we can estimate also anisotropy of Young's modulus. And subjecting the material cycling with plastic deformation, we can observe in initial austenitic steel appearance of martensitic phase. And here is the evolution of such a diffraction pattern. Here is the martensitic peak. There is another possibility. We can combine applied load and temperature. So here is an example of test experiment with aluminium alloy. We measured strain stress curves at different temperature, three different temperatures, and from these slopes we estimated degradation of Young's modulus of this material with temperature. It's presented here. Just another example, we can of course study more complicated materials like drip steels. We had a set of series of samples of small cylinders with different content of zirconium oxide particles in austenitic matrix, and we investigated evolution of the diffraction spectra versus applied load. Here is the evolution of spectra is shown here. We also estimated phase content of this material. We observed a cubic martensite phase here, and also additionally it was a hexagonal martensite phase here, and it was possible from peak broadening to estimate dislocation density in austenite matrix too. So it increases with applied load. Also, it's possible to investigate composite materials like copper tungsten composite. Here's an example. So there are different phases. Copper is quite soft material and tungsten is quite hard material, and this curve represents a redistribution of applied load to different phases, so they exhibit different strains at the same level of load. So alloy activity is connected to development of advanced data acquisition method, so-called RIST mod, and we did a big work here. So the idea was initially suggested by Kudryashov in 1997, but at that time it was not possible due to limitation in electronics to realize this method at good level. And later in our laboratory, our colleagues from spectrometer complex department created us a prototype DAC unit for RIST mod measurements, and after some testing, some short experiments, we put it in regular use on our all three Fourier diffractometers, including FSD. So we started to measure spectra in RIST mod since 2014. So RIST mod unit is based on 5 Altera FPGA chips, and number of detector signals can be raised up to 240. It has quite small discretization time for each event, of about 60 nanoseconds. Maximal exposition time is almost unlimited, defined by time counter capacity. It can be 80 to 52 days. And with these two operation modes of this dark unit. Histogram, which means conventional, the correlation of conventional time of light spectra in internal memory of a unit, and least mode operation. At that, raw data are recorded as a timestamps on a hard disk of a computer. And all list mode events are recorded in absolute time of experiments. Currently at FSD we have a dark unit with 32 input detector signals. And we are recording detector, all detector events from each module, reactor pulses and two pickup signals, rising and falling fronts of Fourier chopper pickup. So there is only one drawback for such system, it's file size. Say, for example, for maximal chopper speed in experiment 6,000 RPM and exposition time of about 1 hour, we collect almost 900 megabytes of file size, and 97% of these events are pickup signals. So during typical 11-day cycle of fiber to a reactor, we are usually collecting 200 gigabytes of raw data, which should be, of course, converted to histograms. And here, let me show how it's represented on time diagram. So this time diagram is plotted using real data from real experiment. So here are presented two pulses from reactor, first one and second one. So reactor starts pulses here, and at levels L equals to zero. Then the chopper is placed here, and here are pattern of pickups, up and down pickup signals, and detectors here, shown in red points. So to each neutrons registered by detector, we have a corresponding part of pickup signal, which should be stored in histogram according to elaborated algorithm. And if we convert this raw data file to textual mode, you can see it's just a chronological list of events, timestamp, time code, and type of signal. It's a reactor start, detector signal, pickups, and so on, and everything is mixed. So we should use algorithm to reconstruct high-resolution diffraction data. So we are reconstructing so-called positive and negative patterns, which are corresponding to open and closed pickup states, and we have these patterns, and from this difference of this pattern is a high resolution spectra, which is our goal. So it has quite narrow diffraction peaks, and we can observe quite wide time of light range. And here's the same pattern for individual peak. So we compared performance of old and new electronics. So algorithm works quite correctly. So we compared spectra, and we are pretty similar, practically identical, and also no problem to apply standard Ritwald refinement for our spectra. But for old electronics, we had a strict limitation for number of channels and channel widths, so which means we are limited until 3 angstroms in DHK space. But for new electronics, there are no limits, so we can install channel widths as we need, even below 1 microsecond, and we can use an number of channels until next reactor pulse, in principle. So very important feature of list mode is possibility to make electronic focusing of different detector elements. This is especially important for 90-degree detectors. As I said, there are 7 elements of 90-degree detectors with individual time-of-flight scales, and the spectra measured with the same channel width looks like this. So we should to reduce all this spectra to unify time of flight scale, and this can be done using specially calculated coefficients to a channel width. And after such a procedure, which can be done during reconstruction of spectra, we can get all these spectra centered with centered diffraction peaks. So This means that we can simply sum up all the spectra into single histogram, which will increase spectra intensity multiple times, say 3-4 times, depending on number of detector elements used. And the same procedure can be used for backscattering detector too. Backscattering detector has only one time-of-flight scale, but anyway, we revealed that there are some misalignments of individual photomultipliers, so this can be also be corrected. So using this electronic focusing, and thus we can increase a little bit also a resolution of these detectors. From my estimate, it's about 5%, but anyway, it's quite useful. Our next possibility of this mode is a possibility to correct phase error. So sometimes due to wrong position of a stator of a Fourier chopper, we are recording such a diffraction patterns with distorted diffraction peaks. And now it can be easily overcome, introducing appropriate phase shift while reconstructing spectra from raw data. And after such a shift of pickup pattern, we can get a highly symmetric Gaussian diffraction peak without any distortions. And here is just an example how peak shape changes with different phase shifts introduced during reconstruction. It can vary from Gaussian until completely asymmetric at different values of phase. Also, we can analyze how our Fourier chopper works, so real frequency window analysis. So here's an example for simple linear window, so-called Dirichlet window. It has two steps, up and down, and it should be linear. But if we select small region here, we can observe some scattering of the optical encoder data. It's the noise of encoder. And also we can fit this part with linear functions and see deviations from linearity. This is due to imperfect PID regulation of a chopper. Also, we compared different type of encoders, magnetic and optical one, and we revealed that magnetic encoder, which we used previously, gives a more, 7 times more noise to the spectra. So that's why we replaced it to optical encoder. In real experiments, we are using such a frequency windows, which are composite Blackmon windows. We are consisting from multiple Dirichlet sweeps up and down, but with a Blackmon curve envelope. And such diffraction, such a sweep functions give highly symmetric Gaussian peak shapes. And also symmetric sweeps can be used.
Could you please speed up a little bit? We are very much beyond.
Okay, thank you. So summarizing, this mode is very very good achievement for us, and it gives us flexibility in experiment. Many corrections can be introduced while reconstructing data from raw data. Next one is the task is related to new Fourier chopper elaboration. So we decided recently to improve Fourier technique, and for this purpose we need a new Fourier chopper with real cut slits in the material in the disk and with boron coating, and also we need extended acceleration range of this chopper. And recently we made a contract with Airbus, and we expect of production of such chopper by the end of this year. We expect absence of pickup shift for such a system. We can measure directly transmission function by laser beam and by neutrons simultaneously. We expect reduced gamma background and improved PID regulation. So I hope we will improve our technique significantly using this chopper. Last slide is represents our control system of a diffractometer. It's a sonic system, typical snapshots. We made some improvements here also. We automated all movements of goniometer. We integrated fully stress rigs, so it can be run automatically also. As far as mirror furnace, we introduced some useful functions in Python library. And experimental control can be achieved by remote connection via RDP. Also, it can be monitored from the WebSonic site. We are using web camera for sample position monitoring, and also telegram messaging is possible to get the messages. So my last slide is devoted to user policy. At FSD, here are typical time distributions for last three rounds. We are collaborating with many countries and organizations, and the instrument is quite demanded by users. And here you can see requested beam time as compared to our spectrometers. So we are at a good level, and the average instrument overload, which I estimated, it's about 1.7 in average. So this is the end of my talk. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for this nice presentation, Professor Bokuchov, which is now open for comments, discussion. Please. Yes, please.
So, Piso, thank you for this very nice talk. My question is to industrial applications. Do you have some requests from industry or external, let's say, partners related to industry?
From industry, it's from time to time, not very often. In most cases, we are collaborating with universities, research institutes, and so on. I think it's a general problem to involve industry in our studies.
Further questions, comments of Professor Fuss?
Please use microphone.
Microphone.
Doesn't add up to 100%. So what is your, what else is there?
Which picture do you mean? This one? No? What inside? This one?
This one. You see, 100%, 0% at the beginning.
Yeah, it was initially absent, no marking set.
What else do you have?
Sorry? On the right side? So it's about 40 for austenite, say for example for this point, and here's, maybe it's, I forgot zirconium phase to add.
What?
Zirconium oxide is absent here on this. Zirconium oxide.
Thank you. Further questions, comments? If this is not the case, then let me thank the speaker. And before we leave for lunch break, Oleg will make an announcement concerning the afternoon program. So please, Oleg.
Yes, I would remind that today we have an excursion to the Florham Laboratory of Nuclear Reactions. So it will start at 2:30. So it means that we have a bit more than 1 hour to have a lunch here at the second floor. So, and we expect to meet you at 2:30 at the ground floor of this building to take a bus to the lab, where we will visit mainly two sites. First site is a place of development of creation of the super heavy elements factory, and second one is the so-called nano center of this lab. So, and please don't miss the time. We'll meet you at 2:30 at the ground floor to take you. So, and we are expecting to be here to return back by 4 p.m. It means that at 4 p.m. We will start the next session here in the same room. Okay. Yeah. No, you members of the program advisory committee and invited experts and ex officio members, if somebody will decide to join us, you don't need any passports, any documents, because everything is ordered for you. Yeah.
And we certainly may leave our things here for the afternoon session. So what you don't need it within.
No, we don't need. We just come back to this.
Okay.
Site.
So just leave here by your computers, sure. And everything. It's okay.